Shalom. That's the only word in my mouth. But a lot of Hebrew words up there, but doesn't come out. So I think it's good enough to start with Shalom. Today's topic of discussion is peace in daily life. Interesting topic. But we already started to see what this peace is. I just want to ask all of you one question. First, we meditated for some time just trying to observe the breath. And then after 15 minutes, I said, what is peace? Now start to contemplate on what is peace. Can anybody tell me which one was more easy? To think about peace or to observe the breath? Was easier?
Yes.
Everybody?
Yes.
Observing the breath? Could you observe the breath every moment? Or you could just think of a lot of things about peace. Ah, this is peace, that is peace. Yes, of course, it is written like this peace. Which was more easier? Second one. In the first, we were trying to be at peace. In the second, we were trying to think about peace. And from there we understand how difficult it is to be with peace and how easy it is to think about peace. Buddha says there are three kinds of wisdom. The first wisdom is called Suttamayapanya. In the language of the Buddha, it is called Suttamayapanya. That means all the knowledge that we gain through listening. You are doing exactly this now, listening. You listen to lectures, you read this book, you read all kinds of books, listening through radios, CDs, DVDs, whatever it is. This knowledge is called Suttamayapanya, one level. And then the Buddha says, Chintamayapanya, second one. That means you start thinking on what you have read. Thinking. What did I read? What did I read? And then the last one is called Bhavanamayapanya. That means wisdom through personal experience. Now today's topic is peace in daily life. From the number of people that I see who have come here, seems there is no much peace in daily life. So we have come here to explore what is this peace. From this short meditation itself, we understood how difficult to be in peace with ourselves. And if we cannot be at peace but keep on thinking about peace, how can we have peace? It is very easy to think about peace. Oh, peace is this, peace is this, peace is this. But Buddha says, unless bhavanamayapanya is there, experiential peace is there, you can't talk about peace. Whatever you talk about peace is an intellectual game. Just think why there's no peace. Apart from so many discussions on peace, so many writing on peace. Today, our Dhamma friend took me to the place, what is that place again?
Khawara.
Khawara, right? Khawara place. I was there, we went to see that, and then suddenly the atmosphere seemed very strange. I was feeling already, as we entered, the energy was very, you know, And then we met two wonderful people there standing, having a very strong discussion with the army officer. And then we went, tried to say some things, didn't feel the energy there. And then I slowly start to understand. I was watching, I was just observing what's going on, wanted to see how the people there are trying to be peaceful, to see how peace can be brought between the people. When I was there, when I started to observe, the people had so good intentions by being there to bring peace. But unfortunately, people there were not at peace. So the good intention, even if it is there, unless the peace within is not there, you can't talk about peace. So mere good intention does not help peace unless you know what peace is at your experiential level. And when you are just observing the breath, you are trying to understand what peace is. And peace will not come by praying for peace. We say ourselves, we're religious, spiritual people, and we go and pray. There's a war going on. And we go and pray, God, please let all the bombs fall on the other side. We are praying to God for peace. And that is our prayer. Let all the bombs fall on the other side. Then how can we expect peace? And then another incident, we have peace talks, peace dialogues between two nations, between two countries. There is a peace talk. There is a huge banner saying peace dialogue, whatever it is. And on each side, all these armies and artilleries and tanks are heading each other, and in the middle there is only a banner called peace talks. How can you come to peace when the first step itself is not peaceful? Of course, first of all, we are not at peace. We are only thinking about peace. We haven't experienced what peace is. Then how can you bridge peace? Not possible at all. To me, it is very clear. Buddha stated an eternal law. It is very clearly stated in the Buddha's teachings that hatred can never be overcome by hatred. It is only through love that hatred can be overcome. This is a very philosophical statement. I'm sure many of you must have heard this many times, read many times. Very philosophical. And now if you look this deep into yourself, at your own personal level, whether you are practicing this or not to yourself, then only you can reflect on others. Otherwise, how can it be? Let's say at a very surface level, we thought about peace, we discussed about peace, and so-called came to terms with peace. All right, let's say there is peace between two countries. Not peace. Because as you come down within our society, there is so much of conflict. Come down again. Let's say the society becomes so-called peaceful. Come down. Again, there is no peace. Between neighbors, there is no peace. Come down. No peace within the family. Come down. No peace within. So if you see the steps, there is something wrong at this basic level. Something is very wrong. And that is that there is no peace within here. How can we expect peace there on that level? And that is why Buddha gives so much of importance to peace that has to start from within. Not through discussion, not through contemplation, but just being with peace. Of course, we start with intellectualizing, reading, and then you start thinking on it, debating on it, doesn't matter. But unless we take the first step, peace can never be achieved. We have to keep on constantly reflecting on it. Otherwise, peace cannot be bridged. Yesterday I was giving a talk in Jerusalem, and they said, Vivek, I think you should give one topic for the discussion. Usually I never prepare for my topic, so I didn't know what to say. So we had a meditation for like half an hour, and then it flashed. Topic flashed in my mind. And then I said, okay, let's talk about the topic. And then I said, smile to liberation. Smile. Nobody smiles here. Very seriously grossed into the discussion. And what I found from my personal experience is that I experience peace much more through smiling than through frowning. And now suppose, in today's incident I saw, that peace was being talked, but there was so much of turmoil inside, so how can peace come? How can peace word even come when your intention is there but the peace is not within? So how can you translate that into peace? It was not that, that was missing. And another incident, we went to the procession today, to the Burmese Aung San Suu Kyi. Again, I was observing, with all the smile I was observing, I was just thinking, I hope people don't misunderstand my smile. And as I start to see these people protesting, China, China, something like this, I saw, initially when I first came, I saw people were like normal, like, you know, not aggressive, very normal. And suddenly, as time passed, the face was ferocious, like, as if they're going to hit or throw some stones at the Chinese. And I was thinking, I thought, oh no, this is not right. Of course, the intention is very good. The intention is very good to shout, to bring out their whatever things they have in the mind about this peace process, whatever it is, very good intention. But the shouting, I don't mind shouting, doesn't matter. And I was thinking, how this can be done through smiling? The same thing, how can it be done through smiling? I thought, is it ever possible? Then I thought, no, it is not possible. Because we haven't learned to be peace with ourselves, how can we show peace outside? I felt it very artificial. I thought, no, it's not going to work. But I tell you, even in our lives, no matter how difficult it is, whatever difficult situation we come to terms with fighting ourselves, if you start peace at that level, then peace grows. Peace mushrooms only when you sow the seed of peace within yourself. Then only peace can grow. If you start planting the seed of hate and you start praying to the God, the Almighty, whatever it is, let peace grow on this tree, how is it possible? Only when you sow the seed of peace, then only you can reap the seed of peace, otherwise fruit of peace, otherwise no. That is why we can't expect peace mere talking, mere discussion. That is why as meditators, all of us, I have seen in Israel, I think probably in Israel, as compared to any other parts of Europe, my friends go and teach meditation. They will have hardly maximum 10 people or 15 people or whatever it is. And in Israel, meditation retreat, we had 80 people on the retreat. And today you see, like, I'm sure there are 50, 60 people here. And the initiative to be at peace is there. Of course, the drive is very strong. But I only have to tell you that all of you have to upkeep with this if you want to achieve real peace. People keep telling me there's lots of things going on in Israel in the name of peace, meditation, yoga, this. But what? It is not apparent on the society. The same hate is there, same anger is there, same jealousy is there. We don't see it. But there are so many things going on then in Israel, Because in Ladakh we have 50% of the people who come to our place are Israelis. And I'm sure some of you must have been there. And today also when I saw this two ladies there, I thought one of the, I just had a feeling. You ask me where I am, and when you hear where I am, you will smile. I just had a feeling. And suddenly after that she came and asked, where are you from? I said, Ladakh. She really had a big smile because she lived there. So this whole thing is going on in this country. Lot of effort, energies are being put, but I tell you, this you should not underestimate. All these energies creates an energy around the places. Wherever you go with this energy, you will start creating that energy around. And if you really develop that energy influences the other person next to you. And this person influences the person next to you. And likewise, if you are really practicing peace within, it starts spreading like this. And it's spreading, 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 it spreads. We say, if in the family, if there's so much of problem, and if there's one meditator in the family, one person starts to meditate, the whole family starts to change. Because he sits down quietly, trying to meditate, being at peace. He's living the peace, not talking about peace, not lecturing on peace, like me. Not lecturing on peace, just being with peace. And when this being with peace is there, people feel it. People will not feel about peace by lecturing. People will feel peace when the being is there. Being with peace is there. Then you feel it. And supposing if you start to meditate and just being with the peace, no matter how the situation is in the family, certainly the whole family gets influenced, provided if you are sincerely doing it. The whole family starts getting influenced. And if the whole family starts to get influenced, then what happens? One member of the family goes out, another member of the family goes out, talks to people, meets people, and then suddenly people start feeling, hey, there's something there. People get slowly starts pulling. Something is there. And likewise, the neighbor starts to ask, hey, what is this? There's something strange about you. Something is there. And people really feel it if you're living the peace inside. And then, slowly the neighbor gets influenced, and the neighbor starts spreading to the neighborhood. And likewise, we say the whole village slowly starts to grow with peace. And then the village influences the next village, and the next village. And then likewise it spreads and spreads and spreads. And likewise the whole country becomes peaceful. But if we start keep on saying, being very pessimistic as to, no, it's not possible, not for us, this peace is never going to be achieved. If we keep on saying like this, it does not help. We keep on saying, it is possible, but it must start from me. Then only it starts. But if you keep on saying, I'm at peace, the rest needs to be at peace, then it doesn't work. I give an example. Some people come to meditation and says, you know, I'm fine. I'm okay, you know, I can deal. I'm quite peaceful. But my wife, she needs to be at peace. She's very disturbed, frustrated. She needs meditation. She needs to be lectured on peace. This is how people come to me, many times. And then sometimes the wife comes. You know, I can deal with situation very peacefully. You know, I don't get much frustrated and this and this. But my husband needs some meditation. Could you tell him? They come to me to say that the husband needs to be lectured on peace. Being at peace. He reacts with anger. Something has to be done. So from this we understand that we keep on telling others that we forget ourselves. Everybody else is wrong except me. But actually if you are a real meditator, if you start to meditate on your own, you will start to realize everybody is at peace except me. And if you realize that, then you are actually living the peace. But until you reach to that state where you say, I'm not at peace, rest are at peace, that's the first step to peace. And that is why my approach to meditation has always been to say, smile. And peace, as and when you are meditating, there has to be peace within your meditation. Otherwise what happens? That very meditation becomes very full of hate and anger. Now when you come to a meditation like this, we have come here together. And mind you, we are here for this 1.5 hours. And after this 1.5 hours, we are never ever going to meet again in our lives. Gone forever. So within this 1.5 hours, let us just be with peace. That's it. That's a good contribution to the society. But if you, once you go out, we face the reality, it's all gone. So if you at least stay in peace at this moment, this will take you far away. But in meditation, what happens? People start to meditate. First of all, we don't understand what the meditation is all about. So you start to meditate. And I keep telling people, when you come to meditation, you are coming to experiment on your life. So you are saying, alright, I'm coming to see my own mind, trying to understand my mind. So that's why I keep telling people, when you come to meditation, any experience happens, you smile first. Let's say you start to meditate, something comes up, the mind is going here, mind is going there, thinking this, thinking that. Suddenly you remember somebody said something to you. Suddenly you remember you said something to somebody, some anger was there, frustration was there. And then slowly what happens is, this anger starts multiplying. Or jealousy starts multiplying. Or hate starts multiplying. And multiplying, multiplying. Suddenly you become so full of hateful. And then people say at the end, this meditation is not for me, I'm leaving. Because we don't understand how to meditate with peace. And the first step to do is, I'll tell you. Any time, every time when you sit down to meditate, you smile. Any difficulties comes, you smile and then go back. Smile and then go back. When you smile, you are dealing it in a more peaceful manner rather than going in the opposite direction of hate and anger and jealousy. But if you keep on smiling, it eases the tension in the head and you can deal with it much better. Likewise, it's the same. We always expect people to talk to us nicely, but we never want to do it. We always expect, he doesn't know how to speak properly, he speaks like this, keep on getting angry, but when our time comes, we never realize this. And that is why meditation makes us to realize that we are not in the right position. That is what the realization is. Once you start to realize this, then the approach starts. Now, how to do it? Of course, our life is so tensed. I don't know, people say Israel is a very tense country. I don't feel it. I'm enjoying, probably I'm in a very different world in Israel. But slowly I will start to understand the tension here. Social pressure is that. I've had many, many Israeli friends who keep telling me, Vivek, you don't know our country. How much pressure we have. Social pressure is there. Political pressure is there. War pressure, this pressure. So many pressure is there. And that's why when they come to a place, they feel like, wow, it's heaven. Because no pressure. Holiday. On holidays, what pressure can you have? But here, when the reality, facing the reality, there's so much pressure. But you have two choices. We, at an individual level, of course we are contributing to our country's peace or whatever it is. Through meditation, we are directly or indirectly contributing to the peace of the country. But since it is not apparent, we don't realize it. And that is the problem. We don't realize that I'm contributing. And that is why people, when they come back home, they feel like again back home in the same mess. Now we have a choice. Life has to be lived. Life has to be lived since we have the life. You can't say, I have this eyes. I don't want to see, destroy my eye. You can't say this. You have the ear. You can't say, I don't want to hear this news. Destroy my ear. Cannot. We have this life. We have to live. How would you want to live? Life is passing moment to moment. Nothing is waiting for you. We have to live. How would you like to live? You have only two choices. One choice is accept the reality that society is messed up. And also accept that you don't have to be messed up because the society is messed up. So you can choose. Either you want to live you also messed up, or you live smilingly. You can choose. There are certain things that we can change. Some things we can change. It looks like we can change certain things, but you can't change the whole system. In psychology, they say, first you try to change the external things, outside. Try to change outside, outside. You know, you try this, doesn't work. Then you try to change the systems within the structure. Try to change. It doesn't work. And then, the best thing is, you change yourself, everything will change. So if you really want to live the peace, you don't start thinking of the peace on a very broad scale. First you think about the peace within, and then the rest, nature takes care. We have to play our own responsibility of peace, and the nature is not so cruel that you are doing so much of peace within that it will not have an influence. Nature is not so cruel. The law of nature, we call it. And if we could do this, then we are contributing to the society's peace. Otherwise, we live with all this complaining. This is not right, this is not right, he is not right, she is not right, I am right. All these pointing fingers at others does not help at all. The moment you start pointing fingers at yourself, then only can we expect some peace. Only one story. In our place, people start to live in a very small village, like let's say here, like the kibbutz, 200 families or 270 families in our place. And people come to Ladakh with this idea that Ladakh is so peaceful. You only see the outer shell. It seems peaceful at the external level, but if you go deep into it, even that society is not so peaceful. There's always friction between the neighbors, friction in the family, some arguments going on here, some arguments going on there. But the shell is peaceful society. People smile. All the time you will see Ladakhi people smiling. But what is behind that smile, nobody knows. But at least one good step is that they are smiling, which is a good step. And that is why we adopted this in our meditation also. We said, all right, we'll start with smiling. Usually the meditation idea is to sit very serious and, you know, the whole face is down like this. One nun who stayed in Burma for like 1 year, she came back to me and said, she took a picture of a teacher, of her teacher, and suddenly the teacher's looks, you know, the face was so like this. And she told me, Vivek, look, when I talk to the teacher, he looks so nice. Whenever I take a picture of my teacher, he looks so serious. In meditation, of course. When he's not meditating, he looks very smiling and like this. As soon as he starts to meditate, looks very serious. And so we at Dhamma House, we decided, smile. Now when we adapted this smile, it was very difficult in our neighborhood to accept this one, smile. Because we are smiling, of course, but in this context, I keep telling people, the neighbors, they start fighting for 1 inch of land. 1 inch of land, they keep on fighting, fighting, as if they are going to live for their whole life, never going to die in this piece of land. And then, me and my sister, we keep on discussing, why do people don't understand this one? And now, we, from our family, we decided, as and when we have a conflict with our neighbor, we will smile and talk to them. So the neighbor starts coming with so much of anger. You know, they sometimes the neighbors are so bad that they, when you pass through, they'll start spitting at you. You know, like these people are bad or something. We decided, no matter what they do, we'll smile and greet them normally. So we started greeting them, smilingly greeted them. Do you know, there was a time when the neighbors were so ashamed to see our face. Because we never spitted back, nor we said anything against them, but we kept on smiling and wishing them in the normal way, like shalom or something, but with a smile. They came very angry, shouting and blah blah, you know, but we never reacted in the same way. And from there, we really understood how powerful this smile is. And to me, I've used this smile in many occasions where people come boiling at me, shouting at me, and I kept on smiling and looking at them, and suddenly they start coming down. Because if I also start shouting, then the energy of hate and anger starts boiling, and the energy starts going to this person, and this energy and the energy becomes one, and then you keep on fighting, keep on fighting. So if the first approach towards this, if you start with a positive energy, then that positive energy, we say, is much more powerful than the negative energy. So if you keep on developing this positive energy, no matter how, you keep on telling yourself, from my side, no energy of hate should go, no energy of anger should go. If you keep on constantly telling yourself and meditating on it, then slowly people start feeling it. This is how we start to experiment it, and we found it quite interesting. So I would like to tell all of you to take this step to smile whenever you are encountered with so much of anger and hate. People start telling me, it sounds very easy. I tried it, but it didn't work. First, when anger arises, somebody says something to you, anger came, you reacted. You became very angry. After you reacted for some time, then you smile, doesn't matter. If you smile after like few minutes, you'll be at much more peace than not smiling. If you don't smile, it goes on for like hours or maybe days. But if you keep on breaking this anger with a smile, you'll be much more peaceful, much more peaceful. And then what happens? Let's say on the first day you smiled by reacting for like few minutes, and you smiled and you became aware, hey, anger was there. Then slowly this becomes shorter and shorter. And then a time comes when you're angry, you immediately smile, and that anger need not be explained. In a family, there has to be peace, especially when you're married or you're living together. In my family, me and my wife, we have an agreement. Of course, husband and wife, there is always friction. If there is no peace in the family, how can we talk about peace? How can we spread peace around? So we have an agreement with my wife. And the agreement is, whenever anything happens, any anger happens, argument happens, and we get angry, bound to get angry, human beings, after all, normal human beings, not enlightened people, suddenly anger is there. What to do? So, of course, I'm very angry, she's very angry, we sit down like this. But we have an agreement, whenever we get angry, to see who smiles first. We have an agreement. And then, let's say I'm very angry, boiling, she's boiling, and then we sit down and start looking at each other through the corner eye to see who is going to smile first. And I tell you, we found it very good experiment, because once you start to smile, I tell you, no need to explain why we got angry, why you said this to me, you shouldn't have said this to me, look Vivek, look Anne. There was no need of a discussion. As soon as you smile, you start realizing it's your own foolishness. Because you smile, suddenly all this tension of hate becomes so peaceful. It works. Otherwise, if you're angry, you start arguing, you start debating on it, unnecessary. That debating becomes more hate, more hate, more hate. It is very difficult to come to terms, especially when the egos are big. The bigger the ego, the bigger the problem. So the simple, there are very simple things in life which can actually bring what we call the big peace. And these very simple things can change your life. The difficulty is we go into too much of complexities, complex discussions, complex arguments as to what, how it should be, how it should be. Theoretically, it sounds very nice. But very basic, simple things actually plays important roles. So try it. Just with your wife or husband, you try this. And if you have peace with your within the family circles, then it is wonderful peace around. Otherwise, you can't expect peace at all. Buddha has made it very clear that there is suffering in the world. As long as there is ignorance, there is bound to be suffering. But Buddha did not stop there, saying, suffering, there is no peace, you all die, finish, or you live with the suffering, that's the end of your world. He didn't stop at this. He said, every suffering has a cause. And many teachers in India stopped at this level saying, oh, there is only cause. So you live thinking of the cause. Buddha didn't stop there. He said that all sufferings, no matter what, can be ended. And again, there are many philosophers in India before Buddha who just said, oh, sufferings can be ended. But Buddha did not stop there. He went one step further. And that one step further is, he said, to end all suffering, there is this wonderful path. And the wonderful path, the Buddha called it, in three steps. Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Very simple words. Sila means morality. Samadhi means concentration of the mind. And Panya means wisdom, purification of the mind. Samadhi and Panya, you leave it aside now. We are normal human beings, we have to live in a society. The first and foremost basic thing is to practice some basic principles in life to develop our morality. That is the foundation. If you don't have that, can't expect any peace. So the Buddha's first principle, he said, is not to harm or hurt any living beings whatsoever. I keep telling the people who come to a place, what is wrong in practicing this? Not to harm or hurt any living beings. Now remember, it sounds very gross, not to harm or hurt any living beings. But even a slight hate, whenever even a small being is harmed or hurt, we are planting the seed of hate. We have to understand that hate is planted every moment that we have anger, that we hurt somebody. With so much of hate, we are planting the seed. And that is why Buddha was clever enough. He said, not to harm or hurt any living beings is the first principle. Because that brings hate. And if you hurt or harm any living beings, not only you harm, you of course will harm others. But more than that we harm ourselves. And if you understand that, then how can you harm others? Now this, we call it the Buddhist principles. But this is a universal principle. If you hurt somebody, somebody hurts you back. It's a universal law. So the Buddha's first principle for normal people like is to just practice this. First principle is not to harm or hurt any living beings with this intention to destroy somebody's life. If you only practice this first principle, you can be so much at peace within yourself. And this is what we call it, the morality, the first morality as taught by the Buddha. And this principle does not have any religious identity, any sectarian sort of a thing. It is purely natural that you don't want to be harmed, so why would you harm somebody? But the world is so full of ignorance, Buddha says, that because we don't understand this, we keep on harming others. We keep on harming others. And for us meditators, at least we realize that this is there. But I don't contribute it. then we contribute peace to the society. So as and when we are starting to meditate, we are developing this peace, the foundation of this peace, and being with peace. So from now on, the best thing would be to just be with peace with ourselves, to learn to be with peace with ourselves, and that is to be in silence, to go deeply contemplating on the silence. One of the greatest scholars of India, one of the greatest gurus, he was called Shweta Ketu. And he was a brilliant scholar. He went to his, what we call Gurukula, to learn all the greatest knowledge about peace, about, you know, all kinds of knowledge. He went and learned and came back. He was known as one of the most outstanding scholars in India. And when he came back, his father asked, have you learned that wisdom, that knowledge, learning which there is no more learning? And he said, no, I didn't learn this. Then he said, have you learned that knowledge, learning which you can end all hate? He said, no, I've not learned. And then he said, have you learned that knowledge, learning which you overcome all ignorance? He said, no, I didn't learn this. Then the father said, then you go and learn. He learned all under these great gurus, all the scriptures he learned, but at the end, he had learned nothing. And when the father said, you go and learn now, he just went to search for this answer in silence. Because immediately he understood, by mere learning, by mere intellectualizing, it does not come. And so when he went to in silence, through meditation, he realized what the Buddha says, bhavanamayapanya, the experiential peace that comes from within. And once you get this peace, you don't have to talk. You don't have to explain it. Once there was a big gathering of people like this, and they were waiting for a great master to answer the question on peace. So all the people were waiting, now this master will come and answer all our questions on what is peace. And everybody was waiting, and the master came. Everybody was so curious, the master is coming. Now he will answer our questions, whatever questions you have. Master came and sat down, very peacefully, just looked at everybody, very peacefully, didn't even say a word. And then what did he do? He just stood up, and then he made some movements of his hand. And suddenly all the people stood up, and just made movements with his, just followed him, what he is doing. And then he started dancing. Everybody started dancing. There was no talking, just dancing. And then he sat down very quietly in silence. Everybody sat down in silence, quietly. And then he spoke one sentence. And he said, I hope I've answered your question. And this is where it shows that silence is actually being with peace. Doesn't mean that you don't talk about it. But if you're silent, then only you can open up as to see what this peace is. And once you experience this at that level, you can't keep it to yourself. You have to give it to the others. We say, if you experience that, if you want to see whether you have had that experience, then the first thing in your mind, you should have one thought, and that thought is to help others. And if you have that thought, then probably you have really gone deep. But unless you have that thought, you have not gone deep. That is what we say. And once you have that thought, then you can't stop. You have to go out, You will start telling people, you will not do anything with expectation. There is no expectation whatsoever. And one more thing is, when you experience that, you don't argue with peace. I do this, but they don't react. They don't respond in the way that I want to. Then again, this is expectation. When you experience peace at a deeper level, you do things, you share it without any expectation whatsoever. But as long as we reach to that level, we always start expecting from what we say, from what we give. And that is more even frustrating, because you will never get what you expect. So we have to reach to that level where you feel, yes, I want to give it to others. I want to share this with others. And if you come to that level, it is a yardstick to measure that you are improving on your meditation. We'll stop it at here. If you have any questions, you can ask.
Solve the problem, right? So there was an issue why you fought.
I also told you, once you smile, you understand your own stupidity. And there's no need to argue. But if you don't smile, there is so much things going on in the mind, you think she is wrong, she said this to me. As soon as you smile, you realize, it's me here. Nothing to do with her. So there's no need to argue. You don't believe me? Try. Somebody says, hey, you don't believe me? Go and try. Smile. Don't take this word very easily. This word sounds very simple. Try it. Otherwise, yeah?
I wanted to ask you, you speak mostly...
I tell you, the underlying base of fear is hate. Yeah. The very subtle, deeper level, if you look at, is hate that brings fear. Fear means what? There is a... You don't like something. You're afraid of something, and that underlying wave, whatever is there, is hate. Hate, of course, when I say word hate, it sounds very gross. You understand? When we say hate means like, I hate you, something. This is the concept that comes to the mind, because we are conditioned by that one. But actually, it's much more subtle than that one. You can understand it from a very subtle level, and that is based on hate. Without hate, you can't have fear. If you have no hate, you won't have fear. Fear comes through hate only. I have a saying, there is no evil, no greater evil than hate. So the greatest evil, if you can think about, is hate. And there is no greater spiritual practice than forbearance. To forbear, to tolerate others. Of course, first yourself, then others. If you know how to tolerate yourself, then you tolerate others. So hate is one of the biggest things. That's why Buddha put it on number one, not to harm or hurt. Because that, you know, brings so much.
In Europe, they're doing a very strong peace meditation. They're doing meditation.
You see, peace between nation, we have to define it differently. Let's say peace between, let's say French and Germany are in peace, you're saying. Well, if they have no problem with each other, if German has their own territory, they have marked it clearly, and they've come to terms, all right, from today you don't jump into my place, and I don't jump into your place, and I don't take your place, this is coming to terms. Understand? This is one way of understanding, and they've come to terms. Not necessarily that the Germans will say, I know what Germans speak about French, and I know what French people speak about German.
Not so loving. Huh? Not so loving.
Yeah, I know. It is only at the political level they are at peace, but deep inside, India and Pakistan are also at peace. Of course, no. But deep inside, hate is there. Alright, they don't meditate, but politically they have come to terms. What I mean to say is, at the surface level, this seems to be at peace. But deep inside, one chance comes, Germans, I've seen immediate reaction, because I know a lot of Germans, that people come to a place and a French people come to a place. And I, you know, they're all sitting in a group. And then when I, what do you think of French? You know, French people are like, you know, and you ask the French or Germans, well, Germans, you know, they're not really, what is that meaning? They don't like each other. There's no peace within each other. And regarding Burma, people meditate. You see, Burma, I've spent about 3 years there. So I know a little bit of in and out. And because I'm an Indian, we have politics in our blood. And I can't stay without being talking about politics. That's our nature, Indian nature. And this dress also is a politician dress. So in Burma, when I was there, I always used to sneak into political discussion, which was very dangerous for me. If they know I'm talking politics, I would be thrown out of the country in 48 hours. Still, I don't care. We talked about it. And suddenly I was in a meditation center in Burma, and I asked these people, why you come to this meditation center? Why? Why do you meditate? A lot of Burmese, there is a time in April, March, April, if you go to Burma during that time, you will not get place in any meditation center. There are over 500 meditation centers of only one tradition. Then there are many traditions. All are packed with Burmese people. You don't get space as a foreigner. So I asked once, I was there, and I asked, why do you meditate? They said, we have so much of hate for this people, for the army. We have so much of hate and so much of frustration. And meditation center is the only place where we can shed this hate and anger. So they meditate. But not necessarily. You see, human beings have three qualities. One is the human nature, human quality. Then we have the animal quality. Then we have the divine quality. When the condition is right, if you have not developed your divine quality to that level, we can any time fall into our animal nature. And then comes out hate, anger. And anyway, these Burmese people have been suppressed for how many years now? After the 1980 elections until today, they've been oppressed, suppressed, and the country has been plundered by the military. So much of hate, anger is there. But the people couldn't express it because they put it inside because they're afraid of the guns. But how long can you keep it? There are many people in Burma who are sincerely, genuinely meditating. But not all people. You can't expect every people to be meditating in the same way. So you can't generalize saying that Burmese people are meditating, they should be so-called peaceful. Of course, they took a very peaceful stand. The monks, what they did was a very peaceful thing. But immediately I knew they will retaliate, and people, you know, when they get violence, if you're not mastered your mind to that level, you can always back with hatred. So that's what's happening in Burma now. They've been too peaceful for the many years, and then trying to fight back now physically. Yes?
So you don't really make peace between countries.
Sorry?
So you can't really make peace between countries if you meditate about peace.
You can make peace.
Make peace with myself.
Yes?
Inside myself.
Yes.
But between countries, between even say neighbors, something different.
Well, I said there are, politically you can make peace. You understand? But if you make peace in yourself, then you are in peace with the other people. But if it is only political peace, that peace can break any moment. Because you are not at peace. If you are at peace, even if there is no political peace, and yet you can be at peace. Why not? That's what I'm saying. You be at peace. First you learn how to be at peace. Automatically peace will spread. But we are not at peace, and we are trying to talk about peace. Then how can you expect?
No, it's not spreading. The peace is not spreading. If you let's take the example, people are sitting there, a lot of monks sitting there making meditation. So it's not spreading. It's not like a disease, like infection that touch other people. People are still remain with the hatred and war and the bad things. How can influence the society much more stronger, much more like instead of going to a political demonstration or something like that, or political talk on you and your neighbors? How we can do it instead of this?
Well, I only feel like when I look at Burmese situation, I only feel that there's one thing missing in Burma. One Gandhi is missing in Burma. One Gandhi is missing, who is spiritual and also knows to be really non-violent. This is missing in Burma. And the monks, of course, they have their own limitation. In Burma, in Buddhist tradition, monks are, in the monks' 225 rules what they have, it is clearly mentioned that monks should not get into politics, first. Secondly, monks must respect the ruling, whatever the ruling political system is. They have to respect it. That is what is mentioned in the scriptures. So the Buddhist monks read the scripture and say, oh, we can't do this. We are forbidden to do this. So there are certain restrictions in the religious setup, in the Buddhist setup. But, you know, once you shave your hair and wear the robe, doesn't mean that you are a monk. After all, you are a human being first, then you are a monk second. But the human beings are human beings. Every weakness is there, unless, even if you sit like this, but if you are not meditating, just sitting down there, it doesn't mean that you are developing. So peace, to me, it has to come first here, then it has to be going other side. You know, as even neighboring countries, you look any country for that matter, there's always enmity between countries. Thailand and Burma, they're like rivalries. They're like India and Pakistan. Same. From the very beginning, they were never at peace. They're always fighting at the border. And yet, both are like really high Buddhist countries. Like, you know, both are like trying to say that Buddhism is the national religion of our country. Why is this fighting? I can understand India and Pakistan are like Muslim and Hindu fighting. But how about these two countries, which are, they have history, long history of Buddhist relationship. Burma gave, from Burma went Buddhism to Thailand when they were losing Buddhism. Burma gave, and when Burmese had problem, Thailand gave, and yet there is no peace. Because, you can't, as I said, you can't generalize that all people meditate does not mean that everybody is enlightened.
Did I ask a question? I want to be at peace, so I but when I meditate, all the anger that I have in me comes up.
Yes.
And there's no peace.
Right.
And every day, you know, I go out and I collect more stress.
Stress.
And then I come back home and I meditate because I want to be in peace. But all the stress comes up. And again, I'm dealing with it, but again, daily life collects stress and on and on. And I understand what you say, but practically, on daily life, very hard, and it feels more like a circle.
One mistake. Don't say it's very hard. Say very. It's very easy. One thing. Secondly, you don't say that it's very difficult in daily life. You say it's very easy in daily life. Say, just say this first.
But as you say, when you're angry, try to smile. It feels very disconnected.
Well, I didn't say try to smile. I said smile. Yeah? I said smile. I didn't say try to smile.
So what you're saying?
I'm saying if you get very angry, if you really want to change yourself, you understand? Are you serious to change yourself, first of all?
Yes.
Really serious?
Yes.
You want to come out of all your frustrations, anger? Okay, good. If you're very serious, now you tell yourself also very seriously, no matter what happens under the sky, the whole world falls on my head, yet I will smile. Take this first step. See what happens. It seems very funny, but I tell you, you get so angry, you say, I'm angry. You say this, I'm angry. One thing. Secondly, probably if you don't see yourself smiling, whenever you go to the toilet, look at the mirror and smile. Do this exercise. You understand? You see yourself smiling. Every time you go to the toilet, smile. Or wherever the mirror is, I'm sorry, but bathroom and toilet is the mirror. Right? Understand? And the conditioning of the mind is all the time, I can't do this. It's very difficult. Change this sentence to, I can do it. It's easy, I can do it. That's how you change it. The first approach is, no, it's so difficult. Finish, you will never do it. No, don't say this, oh, it's so difficult. Do you know, for me, I'm not a great enlightened person who has no problem. I have so much of problem. Same like you, I also get so much of frustration, anger is there. But do you know, whenever I get so much angry, I go to the corner, smile like this. I tell you, half of it goes away. Half remains to be worked. Sit down, meditate. Works better. Otherwise, as you said exactly, and I told you also, in meditation, you are sitting down for what? To observe the reality, not to fight with your mind. You are sitting down to befriend the mind. How can you befriend? Meditation, other definition of meditation is to befriend the mind. Understand this. Not to make the enemy, make your mind your enemy. But many a times, we are fighting with the mind and becoming the enemy of the mind. If you want to befriend your mind through meditation, which is the main reason why you're meditating, then you have to smile. As soon as anger comes, you're working here, you're doing experiments, science laboratory, you go to this laboratory, you take this chemical, you put together source chemical reaction, because wrong chemical you put, doesn't matter. You don't say, oh no, this is wrong, from now on I never do this experiment. Do you say this? No. You say, okay, sorry, this chemical was wrong. Take another one, put it down. Ah, it works out. In meditation, you have tried many times now, try this chemical of smile. The nations.
He wants an example.
Of a nation.
You talk about Indian and Pakistan.
Yeah. I don't know any country which is in peace. But certainly if you ask me, do you know any persons who is living in peace, then I can give you a long list. But if you ask me countries, I'm very sorry, because the people who are ruling the country have no idea what they're doing. They never know what is peace, and these people are writing about peace, they are talking about peace. You can't expect peace. You can only expect more violence, more hate. You know, actually, meditation courses has to be conducted for all these big politicians. They should come down and sit and meditate. In Burma, it was like that before, do you know? In Burma, the Prime Minister was a very, during those days, the Burmese Prime Minister was a very, he was drinking and all, very, horrible person. And then he came to meditation, he became a saintly person, I hope some politicians also here come for meditation and sit down. Maybe you can give them sofa, not cushions like this. Sorry?
Ben-Gurion was meditating.
Yeah, it makes sense. If the leaders are meditating, the whole country makes a big difference, because they are the policy makers, We are not making policies. They are making policies sitting on this chair. In India it's the same. Full of hate among states, hate among politicians. If you see the parliament, I don't know how the Israel parliament is. You see the Indian parliament, they throw shoes at each other, mic at each other, chairs at each other. It's really a horrible scene. That's Indian parliament. And I saw in Japan once, punching like kung fu, you know, fighting in the parliament, jumping and throwing, kicking each other. They are the policy makers, and they talk about peace, by the way, with the mic, throwing each other on the head. We can't expect much peace. So the best thing is, you can't change the world, at least you can change yourself. Take that step, at least. And that itself is a big contribution to humanity. Is everybody is in peace or no? Not yet. Yes? Pass? Okay, pass. Question is fine.
You can give a list of people that are in peace?
Yes?
Enlightened people?
I don't know whether they're enlightened or not, but certainly I know they're wonderful, peaceful people. one example. I was in Burma, and you know Goenkam, he's a great meditation master. He came to us to give 3 days workshop. And you know, I wrote him a question. I said, are you Sotapanna? Now Sotapanna is, you know, in Buddhism we have 4 stages of enlightenment. The first stage is called Sotapanna. That means you enter the stream of meditation. That means once you enter the stream, you're bound to reach the ocean. That is the definition. So all the Buddhist people, they keep on saying, at least in my life I have to become a Sotapanna. I was one of those persons. In my younger days I was like, I have to be a Sotapanna, otherwise what is the use of this life? That madness was there, but now it's gone. That's why I never reached it, because I always wanted it. But anyway, this is called, once you enter, this is, once you become a Sotapanna, you taste what this freedom, liberation is. And then we say maximum you will be reborn 7 times, maximum. And that too you will be reborn in a human existence or above, but not never below, whatever it is. So I asked Goenka, are you a Sotapanna? First of all, he laughed. he laughed like this, seeing my question. And then he said, you just look at the person, his behavior, the way he talks, the way he interacts with people, and you decide who this person is. And he said, it's not important whether I'm a Sotapanna or not Sotapanna, but you, we each individual will know whether I'm what. And if you are a Sotapanna, you help others to become Sotapanna. That means you help others to enter the stream. That was his definition. But to me, it was very clear. He was a saintly person. This is one example. There are many likewise. In Burma, there are so many people like this. In Thailand, there are so many people that I personally met, because I was always curious to know, like you, who is this peace? Who are the peaceful, enlightened people? We even made a list to meet this. We met also. So, yeah, there are many, many people. You know, we say, if you look at the world today, what we see is all violence and fighting and hate and all this. But remember, the law of nature is such, whenever there's so much of hate and anger, there's also at the same time so many wonderful things going on, but poor media doesn't make money by reporting meditation retreat, meditation talking. Who will buy the newspaper? So the media covers only all those loud, crazy things because they can make more money. You see? Unfortunately, these retreats are not mentioned. When I was about to come here, I thought, I'm going to Israel, so I must update myself. So I went www.israel.com, so I thought wonderful news will come out. The first thing is bomb blast, this blast, and these blast. And I thought, oh sorry, maybe I've gone to the wrong search. So I went again, www.meditationisrael.com. And at least there was one news. A Buddhist nun in Israel going to teach meditation or something. I was so glad. There's the right search machine. But there was only one. But the violence and all, there were like numbers of them, unfortunately. So don't, what I'm trying to say is, don't be so pessimistic about the way the world is going. I'm very optimistic. To me, world will never end with hate. It will only end with love for me. Because there's all, look, if in Israel, if you didn't have this so much of tension, do you think all of you will be here today? Think about it. If you didn't have all this pressure, tension, do you think you'll be here for meditation? Probably not. We might be enjoying some music or like some dance or something. Why should you come to meditation? So the law of nature is such that it balances. That's why the world is in balance. To me, it is in balance. Not hate, but it is always balanced by these wonderful things that are going on. If you really go deep, there is so wonderful things going on all over the world, every corner. This sort of discussions, meditations, what the Buddha called it, noble work. It's going on. Yes?
What about India?
India, first of all, is a crazy country. It's a very interesting country because wonderful spiritual activities are going on, and at the same time, in the name of spirituality, many things are going on. Spirituality has become, in many cases, minting centers for money. Business. But India also, there are hundreds, thousands of people meditating. And please remember, in India, now many industrial corporations have made a criteria for selecting employees. One of the main criteria is that the candidate must have done at least one meditation course. If they've not done, no employment. India has taken the step. Indian government and many Indian corporations have taken that step. If you've done one day, one course at least, no matter what it is, meditation, your preference is given. They don't look at your degrees first. Whether you've meditated or not, they look at that first. It's improving.
It's balancing,
yes. Yes.
When you're saying the world is balancing, it seems to me it's like being selfish to look at the world like balancing when it's talking about your peace. It's good for you, your development, to look at the world like it's in balance. Do for yourself and meditate and develop yourself, thinking the world is okay. I leave it like as it is. It's balancing, but the evidence is not. The world is not balancing itself.
You know, I just want to tell you, the world is in balance because you're meditating. The world is in balance because you're meditating. Take it this way. You just think about, the world is in balance because you're meditating.
It's reminding what the Orthodox in Israel are saying.
What?
Because Israel exists because they are staying in the yeshiva and studying.
Well, to me, I always feel that even one person meditates, he's adding to this balance. And there are hundreds, millions meditating today in all over the world. So some people look at the world as like it's going in a very crazy direction and there's no hope for the world. This is the normal tendency of many people. I don't see it that way. Do you see it that way?
I see the world is unbalanced in the world, the pollution, the world warming and...
Of course, that
I
is there.
If people will sit and meditate, nothing will change.
But do you know how many awareness programs are also going on to work on these things? There are many, many campaigns going on, global warming, against global warming, pollutions. A lot of things are going on also at the same time. But as I told you, these are not heard because nobody reports about this. People don't want to know about these things. They want to know about these things. So that's what we don't hear it. But there are so many wonderful things going on to see how we can protect or clean the pollution in the environment. There are many things going on. Any more questions? Seems everybody in peace now?
Almost.
almost. But I just want to add one last word if you have no questions. I was making a film on my teacher, and then I was going through all his writings and for his interview and for the script, and I found one last poem which I used to end the film. And this poem I would like to share with you. It's just one paragraph of the whole poem. It says, "Facing life's darkness." Facing life's darkness, which we all do. We are facing all this darkness. He says, "Don't curse the gloom." You keep on cursing, why this, in my life, why this? Don't curse the gloom. He says, "Just light a candle. All dangers and darkness will vanish. Dhamma is the light. Practice it, my dears." That's what he said. And it's really true. We keep on blaming why this happens, why that should happen, all the time complaining. And he says, just light a candle. All this just vanishes, and that light, the candle, is the Dhamma. Just practice it. So this is what he says. Alright? So with this I would like to conclude, but before that I just would like to tell you, in Ladakh we are trying to develop at our... My whole idea to start Dhamma House program is to change our house into Dhamma House. Same thing, to start where you are. And our idea is not to build up a center, meditation center. Our idea is to transform our house into Dhamma House. So our house has a name, and we changed it and called it Dhamma House. So I kept on telling people, whoever came to our place, to say, change your house into Dhamma House. Now supposing you call your house Dhamma House, you have certain responsibilities, you can't get away. You have made your house Dhamma House, you have to think about meditating, you have to think about having some Dhamma hangouts, or Dhamma parties, or Dhamma dinner has to be there. We keep on having this dinner, that dinner, why not Dhamma dinner? But if you have Dhamma House, then only you can have Dhamma dinner. Otherwise we can't even think about. So this is the reason why we changed the name of our house into Dhamma House. And the whole family is involved in running all these programs. We do workshops, intensive discussions on life, on human problems, house solutions, all this. And also, every week we have retreats. Intense retreats, strict silence. 2 days we discuss very much. Only discussion followed by 1 hour meditation in the evening. But the rest 4-5 hours in a day, so nearly 8 hours a day we discuss. Only discussion intellectually. But then 2 days complete silence. No more discussion. And these are the programs we do starting from June through September. If any one of you are interested, you're most welcome to stay with us. And we don't have such luxury halls. We are very simple, basic, very, very basic. But beautiful place. We're very close to nature, and of course you sleep in tents. We don't have rooms. One lady came, very old lady, she was nearly 80 years old. She came to our place. And, you know, I said to her in the beginning, look, we don't have rooms. Are you ready to sleep in tents? She said, yeah, I'm ready. I was a little bit skeptical. So I took her and put her in the tent. As soon as she tried to get in the sleeping bag, which is small, she was big. She says, Vivek, you know, I just feel like I'm in my honeymoon. I was very happy. At least she reminded of her honeymoon. To stay in that tent. So if any one of you come, we have people who come and do 10 days retreat. Of course, I guide, give the instructions and guidance, we followed by evening talks. So you can do self 10 days meditation with guidance. And then we have people who do 1 week people who do 1 month meditation. So if any one of you want to come and stay with us, then if you're coming to Ladakh, you don't have to look in the Lonely Planet to which guest house you're going. You just come from the airport, say Dhamma House, they take you straight to Dhamma House. And this is the brochure we have. There's a little girl meditating on the hilltop, which I took the picture. And then inside, there is a picture of this most unwanted person. And this picture is taken by Eti. You took this picture for me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So we put it, you sent it me through email, so it's not very clear, but it's okay. Right. So if any one of you wants a copy of this, you can pass it on. Right.